Hi, my name is Jennifer Marsman, and today I'm here with the Bing Predicts team to learn a little bit more about the fun machine learning that they use to make predictions. Now, they're making predictions in a number of different fields, around political elections, around sporting events, around reality TV shows, and around award show winners. And in this episode, we're going to focus on sporting events, things like March Madness and the World Cup. Who's going to win? I'm here today with Kushal and Walter. Guys, thank you for being here. What are your roles on the Bing Predicts team?
I'm the project lead for Bing Predicts.
I'm an engineer on Bing Predicts team.
Excellent. Now, this is an episode I've been looking forward to, and here's why. I understand how Bing Predicts is doing amazing work with things like, you know, American Idol and the political election, you know, for the United States president, because those things are essentially popularity contests, right? You know, the public is voting for them, and the public is, you know, we're getting the public's information from their search queries and such. But sports? So I'm a big University of Michigan fan. Like, I support the Wolverines. Go Blue! But just if I'm searching for them or that sort of thing, that doesn't actually help them play better. So how do you do predictions for sporting events?
Yeah, you have exactly right. I mean, in one of our other sessions and videos, we talked a little bit about how predictions uses popularity, what people do on the web, you know, and also what people see on social. And that correlates well to a lot of popularity events. And sports obviously is not just about popularity, it's about skill, in fact. I mean, and a lot of people wonder, well, how do we do that? And what we do with sports is a little bit different from everything else, and where we have a two-stage model. We basically go with the first stage with the traditional statistical model, something like an Eel chess type model is kind of what we build for that. On top of that, we add web and social. And the reason why we do that, or how we do that, is there's information out there, and it's so-called wisdom of the crowds idea that everybody has some information out there, but no one knows everything. You know, and I think if you want to look at an example of, like, if you want to guess, you know, what the temperature today, the high temperature in Seattle is today, everyone has a guess. Some people overestimate, some people underestimate. But if you average them together, they actually get really close to the actual number. So that's kind of what we do with the sports predictions.
Interesting, interesting. Now, can you talk a little bit about what you're doing for March Madness? I know myself and a number of other people have built their brackets and are looking forward to getting good results there. How are you doing predictions for March Madness specifically, as well as professional football?
Right. So for March Madness, we're official bracketologists for NCAA.
Very cool.
We have a nice partnership with them. And the partnership is that they've given us data. They've given us more than 10 years of data. And from that data, we build our models, the statistical portion of it. And the idea is that you learn different things from past teams and past organizations. So you look at, like, for instance, the team from 2004. Let's say it's a Michigan team from 2004. They did certain things. They had a certain success ratio. They won certain games on the road. And that information translated to how they did that 1 year in a tournament. And the idea is that information can be translated to some other team this year. It doesn't have to be Michigan, because the team personnel is different. But, you know, if a team had three All-Americans from high school, they won three specific road games against very good conference opponents, that could translate well to an ACC team this year that has three All-Americans and won specific conference road games. So the idea is that the model we built is based off of learning how the regular season translates to postseason success and teams and characteristics that lead to that. And our models, which are machine learned, find the features that make the most sense. Some of the obvious ones that you may say is win-loss ratio. I mean, if you win all your games, like the UConn women for basketball this year, then they're a very good team, and they'll probably win the championship. We have predicted them to win. And, you know, we're 2 weeks from that tournament. By the time this airs, hopefully they'll have won. But, you know, for other factors that aren't as obvious, you can look at things like, how far does a team travel to play their tournament game? And some people don't realize that, you know, the closer you are, I mean, it makes sense, but you don't think it would make that big a difference. But if you look at over time, statistically, that actually could be a factor. The other factors could be, you know, the staffing before the season. your season could be good or bad, but it could also be a function of who you had to begin with. I mean, the talent you had to begin with, believe it or not, is actually valuable, because throughout the regular season, teams and the coaching staff can kind of be working their way through what's happening with the team and kind of ironing out issues. But when it comes to the postseason, everybody brings their best five on the floor as much as possible and plays 100%. So the athleticism that comes in at the beginning plays a role. And some people don't realize that. You know, Kentucky a couple years ago were an 8 seed and they got to the finals. That's a good example where you look at the talent, and even though they didn't perform well in regular season, their postseason worked out very well.
That's very interesting. And it's interesting to hear about I never would have thought that maybe one team would be much like, you know, a completely different team in a subsequent year. So that's a really interesting thing to think about. I was actually wondering how you would deal with that, because things like professional football, you see the same players for a long period of time. But when you're dealing with, you know, college basketball, teams turn over like every 4 years at least, and then more often than that, they're getting drafted.
Yeah, situation.
Exactly. So it's interesting to hear how that works. So you mentioned a little bit about some of the features that you're using. Things like not only, let me see if I can remember some of them.
Okay.
So
sure.
You not only kind of the typical things you'd use, like winning, you know, win-loss and those kind of things, but also things like the makeup of the teams, like what they were like
raw
high school.
Talent, if you will.
Yeah, raw talent indicators around like high school performance and things that. As well as traveling through multiple time zones
is another, but
that makes a lot of sense. Something I wouldn't necessarily thought of, but if you're 3 hours off, then
you're 3 hours off, you have jet lag.
Exactly.
Athletes have jet lag, and it's even more important. You know, for us, we might be a little bit tired, you know, here today, but it's actually worse for athletes who need to be 100% of their athletic game.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So can you talk, did you need to do, I assume with all of this data coming in from all these disparate sources, you had to do some fairly extensive data cleaning processes?
Yeah, all the data we have, I mean, I kind of joke about it being a big haystack, right? And we're trying to find a needle or needles that we need out of the haystack. And the data itself is very noisy. And the idea is that, you know, from the web data, I'll start with web data because that's kind of easy to explain from a search perspective. If you search for something like Surface, which is kind of the product that Microsoft sells, that term is ambiguous. It could be, you know, a laptop or a tablet we sell. It could be a Surface of this table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that we actually look at information to kind of clean the data. Say, you know, with entity extraction, with natural language processing, you know, we understand what we're actually dealing with here. These particular queries are about the Surface, the laptop. These queries are not, and that we only want to count the ones that are about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the sports data, there's also a lot of noisy data. You know, we actually get data sources from a lot of places, and besides the ones for NCAA, but other sports, and sometimes there's errors in the data.
Okay.
So you look at the data and realize, okay, this doesn't make any sense. So we actually run our models, and we actually have a quality assurance type phase where we say, does this really make sense? I mean, the length of your team name, should that make a difference? You know, hopefully not, right? You know, these features are spurious, right? And one interesting thing is these models will learn that. I mean, the features, basically all the data, if let's say it just so happens the last 8 national champions have long names, the model might say a team with a long name maybe, and we have to have a human to take a look and say, this is actually not a real, you know, this is a spurious matching from overfitting the data you know, in your machine learned model.
Right.
But yeah, it really does make a difference. I think looking at like professional football, for instance, you look at each feature. Some features are intuitive, again, like in basketball, but some others are not. Like rushing yards, if you have a lot of rushing yards, your team generally wins. If you have very low rushing yards, your team generally loses. But for passing yards, it's actually bimodal, where if you have no passing yards, you'll lose. If you have kind of a decent amount, you'll probably win. But if you have a ton of yards, it goes back into the course where you might lose. And so they need to look at the data and say, why is that the case? And you kind of understand, okay, this isn't spurious. It's actually that teams that get behind start throwing the ball early, and therefore they accumulate a lot of passing yards. So a high number of passing yards could be an indicator that, gee, this team is actually behind, coming from behind, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's good for winning.
Okay, and that's interesting that you mentioned like an example like that, because you know, when we talk about machine learning algorithms, you know, there's linear algorithms versus nonlinear,
right.
And in a scenario like you mentioned, where you know low is good and high is good, and then the middle is different like that,
non-linear.
Then a linear algorithm is just not going to work.
That's
so I assume you guys are using things like decision trees or neural nets.
Yes, we do different. We have a whole toolbox of different things we use. You know, we have decision trees, we have neural nets, we use deep learning. And even for some cases where we're limited training data, we actually could use linear models. You know, we use what we can, and then we look at the result and determine what we should do. Are the results good enough to publish? If so, you know, which algorithm, which technique is the best?
Okay.
We do that.
Yes. Okay, interesting. And then when you're talking about like bringing in all this data and taking these data from all these disparate sources, how fresh are your data sources? Like, how are you able to get data quickly enough to?
It's actually very interesting for the NCAAs, for instance. You know, we want to get all the games right, but obviously because it's sports and not kind of popularity, we can't aspire to 100%. For like the reality shows, we try to target 100%. But for these other events, you know, we don't get 100%. So when we miss a game, our models rerun on the new games. So, you know, suppose Michigan State loses early, then immediately, you know, one fourth of the country thought they were going to win the tournament, and they lose in the first round. Our models quickly look at Middle Tennessee State and say, hey, what are their chances against Syracuse? So immediately we look at the models and say, how do we do this? So it's a real-time system. And it's very useful because I'll give you a different example. We did the World Cup in 2014. Mm-hmm. And in the knockout rounds, we were 15-0. We actually were 15-1 because we missed the consolation game. But with consolation games, effort's difficult to quantify. Mm-hmm. But during that tournament, after the quarterfinals, Thiago Silva picked up his second yellow card, which in soccer rules means that you can't play in the next game. And Neymar broke his back. So in the semifinals, Brazil was playing Germany, and that was kind of an anticipated matchup between two very powerful teams. And Brazil was the host. So the prior model, which is a statistical model, would say, hey, look, Brazil is slightly better. They're about even teams, but if you're playing at home, Brazil gets the edge. And what we had was the real-time information from web and social. And the web and social data was saying, oh, you know, these two injuries are so significant that it doesn't look like Brazil's going to win anymore. So our model took that into account. You know, we had the real-time data, people's web and social signal telling us it's clear that the opinion is that Germany will win the game. So our models had strong enough signal to move the outcome to Germany. We picked Germany. For those of you who don't watch soccer, Germany won by a big margin, and they went on to win the World Cup. So, you know, it's kind of a testament to the fact that crowd wisdom does have value. A lot of experts in sports kind of think that it's kind of unusual, but the reality is it does help.
So let's define that. So when you say web and social, what you mean is, by web, you mean like search queries, so things that people are searching for on mm-hmm. Bing.com and other such things. And then by social, you mean like what people are saying on Twitter and Facebook and those sort of things,
that's
correct?
Right. That's right.
All right, great.
We have access to all data. It's anonymized and aggregated, but everything that's public we have access to because we run a search engine. And therefore, the web data search is where people are clicking on what documents they're visiting. We have that information. And in social, we have sentiment. You know, are people saying positive things about this? Like, oh my gosh, I'm a Brazil fan and we've lost two of our better players. That's a sentiment against them winning, even though the comment is about Brazil.
Okay.
So we can look at that and figure that out.
All right, excellent. So then how does this web and social signal help you guys make predictions?
The way it works is that, you know, this wisdom of the crowds is that people's opinion, everyone has a little bit of information that adding to the system. And in aggregate, that information is valuable. It's kind of, you know, there's a law of large numbers where some people overestimate, some people underestimate. But when you average it all together, you get to this mean, this true mean. And you know, research has shown that wisdom of the crowds does work. And you know, you don't have to be an expert. People say, oh, you must wait, like the television commentator is the highest. Well, they might not be the best. I mean, they're obviously professionals, but you know, there could be people who are average Joes who are watching the sports who actually know a lot too. So we kind of say, well, everyone's opinion has some value when you average it all together.
Right, and what percentage increase does this give you?
Yeah, we actually see about 5% increase in accuracy for our predictions, and that's quite a reasonable amount for sports, given that it's anyone's game, if you will, in sports a lot. So you get a 5% lift by looking at this wisdom of the crowd.
All right, so that is this web and social is giving you a 5% bump in your accuracy. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
It's very helpful. Yeah,
that's really, really cool to think that that's significant enough, that 5% increase
right.
based on just these what people are searching
that's
for
right.
and what people are saying. So that's really, really neat. So I understand you've also done predictions for some international events. Mm-hmm. I know there have been some cricket matches, as well as the World Cup and other things like that.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit more about like the soccer predictions, for example?
Sure. Well, I guess you're right. We do international work because Bing is an international search engine, and we have a team in India and also a team in China starting up, kind of working with predictions in different areas. And soccer is a big area. It's the world's biggest, most popular sport.
Yes.
And Kushal is one of our data scientists who does a lot of work on this, so I'll let him speak a little bit more about that.
Oh, thank you, Walter. At present, we do predictions for 7 soccer leagues. That would be the domestic soccer leagues for Germany, England, Italy, Spain, France, Brazil. And we also do predictions for Champions League. And this is on top of the World Cup predictions that we did. So we follow one of the most popular soccer leagues in the world, but we definitely want to increase our reach to other soccer leagues, like for example the Chinese Super League.
Mm-hmm.
The predictions are live at this point. For example, if you're interested in Champions League, which is in its quarterfinal stage, about to start in April, we have predictions for Champions League live. We have predictions for let's say you are interested in English Premier League, that's live as well.
Very cool, very well. Could we see some of this? I'd love to see the experience and some of the stuff that you guys are doing.
All right. So the way you access predictions is very simple. You log on to Bing.com or you open your Bing app on your mobile device, and you search for Champions League or queries related to Champions League, and our query understanding will figure out that your intent is to get information about Champions League. This is a nice UI, it looks like a card, where you can browse week by week. These are just tabs. So week 9 is the next week where we have quarterfinals lined up. So as you can see, these are live predictions about the quarterfinals setup. About the time when this video goes, these matches will be over. So it's a good way to check out our predictions. In the next four matches, we favored the home team to win, except the match between Real Madrid and Wolfsburg, where Real Madrid is predicted to win. So soccer has three predictions, the probability of a win for the home team, okay. Probability win for the away team, and the probability of a draw.
Okay.
So it's a three-way probability prediction.
Okay.
So if you were to choose at random, you would assign a 1/3 probability to all, so 33%.
Okay.
So that's how we actually measure how good we are doing with respect to random as well as our nearest competitors.
That's wonderful. That's very cool. Can you talk about what features are used for these soccer models, and how would you go about doing a prediction for a
sure.
soccer league?
For a soccer league, we use historical match statistics and what the final game result was. We also add features extracted from our web and social signals as well. And as Walter mentioned, that some of the times, how people feel and what people are saying, especially fans and experts, actually can help your model learn a little bit more over just historical match statistics. So for soccer, we do that as well. The kind of features that we extract sometimes differ. That would differ from basketball to football, depending on what kind of a game it is. Let's say the outcome of a game could be just win for either side, as opposed to soccer, where you have a chance of a draw as well, right? So web social and historical match statistics are signals that feed into our models.
Excellent, very cool. Is it possible to see a demo of how you went about building this
sure.
in Ether?
So Ether is our toolbox where we build a workflow, a conceptual workflow of how data processing should be done, how the data should feed into the training model, and how should we finally produce the probabilities. So this is our statistical part of the model. The upper portion here is where we actually are aggregating and cleaning the data that we have got from the historical match statistics. These two boxes here create the training data for our models to learn from. These two boxes are where we are training two sets of models. And the reason is that two sets of models basically give a different way of learning the ground truth, which is how many goals one team could beat another, or there could be a draw. And then there's this final module, which actually takes in the final probabilities from both the models and reconciles them to produce the final probabilities. So this is a conceptual workflow. Each of these boxes could either contain code or data. So we have to actually manually add each and every module. So let's say if I write code for creating the training data, I would wrap it up in a module, which could basically take an input and produce some output. So this is like what you would see in Azure Machine Learning.
Yes.
Instead, this is a little more custom and lets you interact with internal data assets more freely than Azure Machine Learning would do. As a matter of fact, this is Azure Machine Learning is based off of Ether. So these are the final probabilities, and this is just the statistical part of it, but it influences the final output that you see on Bing.com.
Oh, that's very cool. Could we jump back to the diagram for a second?
Absolutely.
So it's really cool to see the internal tool, and that this work kind of inspired Azure Machine Learning, which is a great public tool to use if you want to do cloud-based machine learning right from a browser. Mm-hmm. And it contains modules that you can drag and drop, and 25 different algorithms are available in there right now.
Right.
And you have the ability to do a lot of cool like data cleaning and get data from various sources as well. So I'm a huge Azure Machine Learning fan, and so this is really cool to see some of the stuff that inspired that work. What is the difference between a dark purple box and a light purple box here?
All right, so dark purple box means it's a purely data source. There's no code in it. Okay, and the lighter ones means they might have data in it, they may not have data in it, but there's definitely code in it. So it's a module as opposed to this being a data source, and this is terminology in Ether world.
Very cool.
But you, like you said, if people want to do the same thing, they can use Azure Machine Learning and apply that. So it's definitely very,
yes.
It's a public tool that people can use. This particular tool is not, but the Azure ML is.
Well, it was cool to get an inside look at the tools that are used inside of Microsoft for doing this amazing machine learning. So now that you guys have providing all of this, you know, wealth of information about various sporting events, how can users consume this?
So it's simple. You can go to Bing.com if you're using a web browser and enter queries that actually interest you. Let's say you're interested in March Madness, enter March Madness. And apart from the web results, you will have this nice card with rich UI. That goes the same for any other sports or entertainment, elections, whatever you want to. Bing.com is your endpoint. You can use the Bing mobile app as well. Whatever mobile platform you're on, Bing mobile app also provides an interface for this. So it's pretty simple. It's as if you're just querying for something else. It's just that if we see that we have a rich experience for you, we're going to display that as well as the web results.
That's great. And they are beautiful visualizations. They're very well designed. I like the look. And
yeah, your team does a great job with it. And I think we want to make sure users can quickly come to our site, get the information they need, whether it be predictions for events, when the games are happening. You know, and our predictions help you either if you're an enthusiast, you can say, can you beat us? Can you compete with us? If you're not an enthusiast, you can still use this information to figure out, hey, which games do I want to watch? If there's a couple of close predictions that we have, maybe that's the game you want to watch for this weekend. So mm-hmm. That's kind of what we want to use this for.
Very cool, very cool. And one final question. How do you guys compare with other folks in terms of your accuracy numbers?
I would say we are pretty close. In fact, we are when I say pretty close, we are actually a little better than our competitors. We get approximately 5% lift because we have data assets from our web and social index that we maintain.
Okay, it is 5% increase. Wow, that's wonderful. Very, very cool stuff. And if people want to learn more about Bing Predicts and some of the cool things you're doing and kind of follow along with your adventures, where can they go?
Well, so we have a site called bing.com/predicts. And that site gives you a list of kind of everything that we have going on. We also do, the Bing blogs invites us to write blog posts in the fall, during the professional football season. I write weekly blogs, tell people, these are our predictions, and here's some insights or thoughts behind them. Same thing with March Madness, you know, I get a chance to kind of speak a little bit about that. So the Bing blog site is a good place to go. The Predicts website on Bing gives you, you know, the latest what we're doing. And also just go to bing.com, you know, if you're a sports fan, or you know, a politics fan, whatever. If you go to the site that you want to, you know, go to our website and do some searches related to the entities related, and you'll get information about it.
Very good deal. Well, I love this. And so the next thing you got to do is just help University of Michigan go a little further in the brackets next year.
That's right.
I'm gonna work on that. My Wolverines were out in the first round, unfortunately. All right. We hope you enjoyed learning a little bit more about the predictions made about sporting events by the Bing Predicts team. Now, if this was interesting to you, you might also be interested in the deep dive episodes with the Bing Predicts teams around elections, award shows, and reality TV shows. So please check those out. Thanks a lot.